Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast, breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system, here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. This is an unusual time for me because I've got a fellow colleague, fellow member of the Intelligence Committee, good friend of mine, Chris Stewart. Actually, an Air Force veteran and a best-selling New York Times. How many books do you have now on the best-selling list?
I don't know. A few.
A few.
Yeah.
He's
4 or 5 or 6 or something.
And The most important thing about him is he still holds the record for the fastest time around the world in a B-1.
Yep. Fastest nonstop flight around the world, which was a lot more fun than being in Congress.
Well, Chris Stewart from Utah, outside of Salt Lake City. I've had the chance to be in your district before. It's a beautiful place. And what I wanted to have you on today, Chris, is we don't do a lot of current events on the podcast, but because this was kind of a monumental hearing that we had this week with Robert Mueller, the longtime DOJ, then FBI director who was brought back to handle the Russiagate hoax, as I call it. You know, with your background, not only being on the committee, being in the middle of all this for the last 3 years, I wanted to get your perspective, especially as a writer and a historian, you know, somebody who follows this stuff closely. So let's start with, what's your initial fallout after the Mueller hearing?
Well, and I want to answer that question, Devin. I know you don't want me to do this, but I have to say and point out to everyone the incredible, important role that you've had in this over the last 2 or 3 years and your leadership on this. And I think you've done something that no one else could have done nor maybe would have done in bringing so much of this to light. So it's been an honor to work with you on that. And it's helped save our democracy in many ways. And I really mean that. You know, my original impression is I think maybe best described this way. Devin, do you remember the Ollie North hearings? Were you old enough to remember that?
Yeah.
But there were some moments there that, you know.
I was barely old enough.
These years later, we remember that though. Mm-hmm. And the 9/11 commission hearings, there's parts of that I remember. I don't think anyone's going to remember this hearing past Friday because there just were no bombshells. There were no surprises because we've had this information. I mean, my gosh, you and I have had it since we've been looking at it for, you know, more than 2 years, and certainly since we released the Republican intelligence report. And for those people who thought that he was going to come and have this dramatic moment where everyone goes, holy cow, look at that. Look what he said. We didn't know that. After we've had the Mueller report for 4 months and we know what's in it and we know what's not in it. So I think it I'm glad we did it, and I'm certainly glad we had a chance to ask him some questions, but I don't think there was anything dramatic.
Well, and as I said in my opening statement, that the Democrats had already telegraphed to the media and everyone, and this was their words, not ours, that they were going to bring the Mueller report to life.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very unusual. I mean, they're essentially admitting to the press and to everyone that – they're going to take this boring 450-page document that really they couldn't have asked for anything more because the truth is there was never any collusion. You and I know there was never any collusion. It was a hoax from the very beginning that Trump had anything to do with Russia. But they morphed it into an obstruction of justice investigation that then just turned into an obstruction of justice trap after that. And so they got the very best boring 450-page report they could get because if you read volume one, it reads like unlike your novels, it was a really bad Russia spy novel and, you know, really pathetic in the rhetoric that they used. And then you get to this goofy thing of how they could ever charge obstruction of justice, which they at first started with Comey.
Yeah.
And then it just became a trap, you know, anything that Trump ever said, tweets and everything, that somehow that was obstruction of justice. And then the whole idea that you can obstruct justice on something that you never did, I think would never fly and never sell with the American people.
Yeah.
So, what are your thoughts? You know, on the marketing of this thing.
Yeah, I think there's two things that I would say. Number one is essentially what they said, and if you think about it, this is true. They said, "Well, we think the American people are stupid or they're lazy, and they're either too dumb to read the report and understand it, or they're too lazy to read the report and not care about it. So we're going to explain it to them." And that's what they were hoping to do. Yeah, you guys, we know you're not smart enough
even
to read
if
this.
They already had the Hollywood actors read it and act it out in New York City at some playhouse
but,
or something.
But think about that, and it's really true, and how insulting that is. Yeah, we know you guys can't figure this out, so we're going to bring Mueller here, and we're going to explain it to you like children. And it turned out that wasn't the case. And the second thing is that you pointed this out. They went from this collusion, conspiracy, these people have committed treason and they must be hung, to, well, you know, okay, but there's always obstruction. And now they're saying, well, that probably isn't obstruction because of the reasons that you just described. So, but what about financial misdealings? Let's dig into his taxes. Let's get all their financial reports. Let's look at every check that Trump's children have written in the last 30 years and go analyze that. So to say the goalposts are always moving is being generous. They're just desperately looking for anything to hang around this president.
Yeah, it's like those X Games where you have to jump onto those floating movable objects.
Exactly. Exactly. And some of these are screaming by pretty quickly. But you know what? They're not going to quit, Evan. I mean, they're not going to end this strategy till after the election, because their whole point is to destroy this president, and if they can't destroy him, to make sure he doesn't get reelected.
So let's turn to some of the specific questions. I thought our members on the Intelligence Committee, the Republicans anyway, had a lot of really good questions that for the most part went unanswered. You asked some very good questions about some obvious leaks that could have only come from the special counsel's office. So I know you want to know the answers to those questions, but if you had to name for our audience here that is, you know, not only in the state of California in the San Joaquin Valley, but it's also – we get a lot of people that listen to it nationally. What are you – you know, longtime Intelligence Committee member Chris Stewart from Utah, what are the kind of the top three or four questions that Mueller did not answer that you want answered?
Well, and I don't think this will shock anyone who's familiar with this, but I want to go back on the inception of this investigation, because it seems very apparent to me that we had a few individuals, not many, but a few individuals, Department of Justice and FBI senior leadership, who essentially said, hey, the American people messed it up. They blew this election. We're going to fix it. And they targeted in a way that was clearly against every democratic principle that you and I have sworn to defend, essentially saying, like I said, we're going to fix this ourselves. And I want to know, and I wanted Mr. Mueller to be more open about his feelings on that. The second one is another principle that we, I think, have to defend, and that is this idea, as we tried to point out yesterday, you take the idea of the presumption of innocence and just turn it on its head. You know, we're not here to charge and to try and to convict. We're here to tell whether someone is innocent or not and exonerate.
Well, that gets to the point, put a little exclamation point on this about being exonerated or not. The big challenge that I think the American people need to really understand is that it's never okay to put a U.S. citizen under a counterintelligence investigation, first of all, with no information or just rumors. I mean, no matter what the issue is, whether you know somebody's accusing you of being a spy or working with Russians or what have you, but this was even worse because it was a political campaign that was even more ridiculous. And you and I both know there's people who break laws all the time with campaign finance and political during campaigns, but those are criminal. And that's the big difference, is making sure the American people understand what you and I oversee. Counterintelligence is supposed to be targeting, on a limited basis, American citizens only when there is overwhelming evidence, because we have secret courts that they go to, the FISA court.
So much power.
A lot of power with no checks and balances. Mm-hmm. And we really, as the House Intelligence Committee and Senate Intelligence Committee, we're the only ones that have the power to protect innocent people. So I think understanding the difference between how they conducted this investigation in the counterintelligence realm versus the going a criminal route, which I think you and I have no problem with if somebody has broken the law, go the criminal route.
Well, and I heard you make the point yesterday on another forum. You said they knew they didn't have enough evidence for a criminal investigation. So this counterintelligence opened the door for them to do much what they wanted. And the second thing, and this is, I think, just such an important point, by the threshold that they used to open an investigation, virtually everyone in public office or any public person at all could be under investigation, because we have people say things about us all the time. If you're a Hollywood figure, if you're a media figure, if you're a teacher, everyone
the fact that they, if you believe them, and I don't think you or I believe them for a second that they started this investigation on July 31st because of Papadopoulos and information that came from what they describe as a Five Eyes person. Yeah. And then in the Mueller report, it turned into a foreign diplomat or something like that. But the truth is this guy, Alexander Downer, is a politician. Yeah. And I mean, imagine, you know, you and I going to the FBI and saying, hey, we think our Democratic colleague over here is, you know, working with the Russians and taking campaign dollars. I mean, the FBI would look at you and I and say, what are you talking? What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
Much less go open up a counterintelligence investigation on that person. So they took the word of a foreign
politician
who's been a longtime partisan politician involved in all sorts of, you know, he's a very political guy, and they took that and used it. I mean, it's just really ridiculous.
And not only did they take and use it, but they kept it so tightly confined within very senior leadership positions. Instead of sending that to a field office like they normally would and give it to professional FBI agents to say, you guys investigate it, they held it in this little cloister of McCabe and Strzok and Comey and others and said, oh, we're going to take care of this ourselves. But I got to come back to this other point just because I think it's so important. Every one of us, by that threshold, if all it takes to open an investigation is a rumor, then who in the country isn't subject to being investigated? Because who in this nation hasn't had someone say something about them that is untrue but would be negative?
Which is why it should have to go to the criminal route. Yep. So what else? You have a couple more items that you think that you really like to learn more from Mueller about specific issues that are unanswered?
Well, I do, but they're kind of technical and I'm not sure that they're terribly interesting. But I don't know. I'll take that back. Actually, I think they should be interesting. One of them is we talked about the content of the people around him. And what we now know is that there wasn't a single Republican. They're all Democrat or Democratic.
The makeup of the team.
Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I don't know, and I've never asked anyone. But it seems to me this would be one time you should ask someone. You should have asked, hey, do you have political views? Are you a strong advocate for one or the other? Because, look, there's lots of people in D.C. who really do kind of go down the middle, and they maintain a professional persona, and they haven't become politically active. He should have looked for people that were not politically active. And it can't – and I'm sorry. It just can't be a coincidence that virtually every one of them – we now find out we're Democratic supporters or operatives. You know, the chances of random would be that they'd be about 50-50. This city's about 50-50.
And you have to really question whether or not Mr. Mueller actually put that team together.
Well, after yesterday, you have to question how much Mr. Mueller was involved with a lot of this investigation, because I think Wiseman and others were the ones who drove this. He did not seem to be that involved.
Well, I think Trey Gowdy may have had our former colleague that sat on the Intelligence Committee. He's always good for one-liners, but he probably had the best one-liner that the one who learned the most from the Mueller testimony was Mueller himself. Mueller.
He learned more from the hearing than any of us.
So any parting thoughts? I really appreciate you coming on and educating the audience on this.
Well, I actually do have one, and I don't mean to sound overly dramatic, but I really believe this. I think this was an incredibly important moment in our history. If we had not got this right, and Devin, there were times in the last few years when I wondered, I don't know if we're going to get this right. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're going to hold these people accountable. But if we had not been able to do that, and I'm convinced now we will, God bless Attorney General Barr and the other special people he has working around him who are looking into this. Because if we'd mess this up or let this go unanswered, the future for our democracy was in severe doubt. Because to give these people that power, not hold them accountable, let them play in the political arena and just say, well, we're not going to worry about it, that's a horrible precedent for our future.
Well, I always tell people when they ask about this, you know, one of the biggest challenges in all of this has been is the involvement and the complacency in the media. And, you know, we knew through our investigation, you know, we had to hold our members together because you and I and only a handful of others were the ones who had seen the actual information. So we had to work slowly and figure out ways to make sure we got it out to the public legally so that the public was slowly educated on this till eventually there was a change at DOJ. And a lot of this could be taken care of. And hopefully Barr will conduct an investigation into the origins of the investigation and everything else. But there were a lot of times there when, you know, we could never miss. Everything we said, whether it was our memo that we put out or the report that we did, that was basically our report is not only reads better than the Mueller dossier, as I call it, but it's actually proven to be right.
Yeah.
And we don't get a lot of credit for that, but we just could never be wrong. And
every single word of that has been of our report has been proven to be accurate and true.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for all the work that you've done and will continue to do on this, and indulging our audience with your great voice.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
And you can get your books on Amazon, right?
I'm sure you can. I'm a congressman now, so I don't think that much about it. But yeah, I continue to write, and it's really something I enjoy. And yeah, I got him in the trunk of my car, if anyone
I hope when you write your book about the Russiagate hoax that you say a few nice things.
Oh, my gosh. I've tried to do that, but it's too weird. I mean, you write this, and it's like no one will believe it.
So yeah, it's like a spy novel that actually happened.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.
This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams. It whips the dust up and rains pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We've started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we've kept our American faith. Now it's not our first trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith. We, the people, free and strong, fight through the dark night toward the dawn. Freedom marches on. Afraid.
That's why they call her the home of the brave.
With a prayer and a purpose, we're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.